When I was in 8th grade, my dad splurged and bought his dream car. I was much too young at the time to drive, so I don't remember any of the specs. But the gist is, he purchased a convertible BMW Z4. It was silver through and through, with chrome and glass for the accents. It was an absolutely beautiful machine, and had a lot of power underneath that hood. Well, that first year that he bought it, he wanted to go on a road trip with me. A way to celebrate, a way to bond, and a way to break in the new ride. He even said he'd give me some driving instructions. All of it sounded fun, so when school got out that summer, we packed up and hit the road for about a week total. We couldn't fit much more in the way of clothes and supplies in the trunk and the back seat. If you've never seen one, Google it. Z4s are very small cars. But it was fun, and we hit the road with a good idea of where we were going, as my dad and I had been loosely planning our trip for about a month or two. We'd go north at first, then shoot over west before coming down the coastal highway through California. We jammed music, talked about life, told stories from the good old days, typical father-son stuff. We even told riddles and jokes, some of my favorite pastimes. We saw all manner of beautiful terrain, mostly canyons and valleys throughout the Southwest and the Pacific Northwest. It was cool, and I loved every minute of it. Stopping was a treat too. I was a fat kid growing up, so I loved all that gas station delight food, and we got a lot to eat. Chips, jerky, soda, gut bomb burgers, all of it. Other times we would stop at nicer hotels, and this would prompt my dad to seek out nicer restaurants for us to eat at. It was a cool dichotomy, and seemed to satisfy both of us. There was one night that we rolled into some mid-sized town, and I can't remember the name of it. Litchfield or Litchbrook, something like that. This was one of the stops where we got a nice hotel room. We hit the pool, then wandered around downtown a bit. I remember we were both gawking at all the ladies. Literally every single woman that we laid eyes on was prettier than the last. "It's like there's something in the water out here, son," I remember my dad saying. "You might be hitting the road on your own tomorrow." After a nice dinner and a walkabout, we decided to head back to the hotel room. I could tell something weird was going on right when I saw the place. There was this small crowd, clustered around some cars that were parked funny. My dad didn't seem to bat an eye, didn't say anything about them, so I just kept on cruising too. I didn't want to seem like a big baby or anything, since I guess technically nothing was really going on. But still, it was weird. I remember leaving a lingering eye on that crowd as I closed the door behind me and turned the deadbolt until it locked. We were on the ground floor. Well, the whole hotel was, so it's not like it was super fancy or anything. It also didn't have any kind of great security. It was a standard hotel door, standard double locking system with a deadbolt and chain, a huge viewing window right by the door, and curtains pulled closed over it. Pretty typical. We settle in, and I start eating some peanut M&Ms. This was another staple for these road trips, as they were my dad's favorite candy. We were watching reruns of Seinfeld when I heard the first few shouts come from outside. I turned and peeked, but Dad just kept watching TV. The guy seemed unshakable. "You think they're just drunk out there or something?" I asked. "It's none of our business," was all Dad said. I nodded and felt like I learned a valuable life lesson there. By the time it hit 9 p.m., we were both pretty beat, so decided to turn in for the night. The riffraff outside seemed to have settled down, and we wanted to get out of town by 6 or 7 a.m. to stay on schedule. So trying to pass out just made sense. We did our bathroom ritual and then promptly went to bed. I didn't fall asleep though. You see, my dad has this magical ability to be able to fall asleep anywhere, at any time, no matter what's going on. He was snoring loud as hell, and outside I could hear those voices getting louder again. My anxiety was further amplified by the fact that I was alone, or at least the only one awake. It just makes things that much worse when you're the only one privy to what is actually happening. Outside, it sounded like your pretty average tailgate party. After listening in for a bit, something changed though. Instead of cheering and vibing, it sounded like voices were getting heated, agitated. I kept checking the clock. Around 10:30, the agitation started. By 11:30, the guys were full on shouting at each other. I could hear a few people trying to mediate, but whatever was happening was quickly getting out of hand. Out of nowhere, the snoring stopped. My dad popped out of bed. He pulled a shirt on and moved to the window, peeked through the blinds. I had my eyes cracked open so I could see his expression. He kept a perfect poker face, just observing whatever was going on out there. My dad was a former Marine, and honestly, we had all heard rumors at family reunions and our get-togethers that in his youth, he'd beat a man to death during a bar fight, then fled town right after. Lack of evidence kept him from ever going to prison. "What's going on out there, Dad?" I asked. "Just a bunch of drunks," was his retort. Dad had also been sober for a couple of years, had a particular disdain for those that got drunk in public. He was a tight ass, is what I'm saying. And now a bunch of strangers had woken him up dead of the night. Any fear I had quickly dissolved. The voices got louder and louder outside, and my dad didn't really miss a beat. He pulled on a pair of shorts and his shoes and started for the door. "There's a gun underneath my pillow," he said. "Keep an eye out and don't open up the door for anyone." With that, my dad disappeared into the darkness. I hopped out of bed and immediately shouldered up to the window. It had one of those big, heavy curtains draped in front of it, the kind that could pass for a comforter. I peeled back one edge and looked out with a single eye. I had nailed those sounds that I was hearing earlier. It was a little tailgate party in the far parking lot of the hotel. One of the trucks seemed to be for the road company of some kind, like highway maintenance or something. It had cones and stuff in the back, and one big decal on the side. Definitely a work truck. My dad approached these guys from the shadows. He skulked around the side of the building and stuck to hard-to-see places. Only once he was pretty much on top of them did he step out and make his presence known. The crowd flinched at first, then turned and got somewhat silent. I couldn't hear the words, but Dad was moving as he spoke, motioning to the hotel room and then his car. Everyone nodded along, then he said goodnight. Dad always gave off this cop energy, so people usually listened to him. He came back to the room, slipped the key in, and then sat on the bed. "So much for a decent night's sleep," he said, checking his phone. "You should try to get a little more rest. Everything should be good now, son." And I did. I was tired as hell from the drive and sitting up all night. It was well past midnight at this point. My eyes were burning. But with the brief silence and security of my dad, I slipped off into nothingness. I don't know for how long, but what felt like just seconds later, I was shocked awake by a pounding on the door. I remember what my dad said in the moment, "Don't open the door for anyone." But for some reason, I had it in my head that he was still outside. That no time had gone by at all, and I'd just fallen asleep while he was having his first little conversation with them out there. I hopped up in a panic and rushed for the door, only to feel a heavy hand come down on my shoulder. Startled, I whirled around, and there was my dad, sitting on the edge of his bed. "We're all here, we're all good," he assured me. "Just that nonsense outside." He was projecting confidence, but I could tell my dad was a little rattled. Maybe he'd been sleeping too, and now he didn't know what was going on. Whoever was out the door kept banging and started to holler throughout the walls. "Help me! Please! You gotta let me in!" Beyond that, we could hear voices from earlier, closing in on the room. Dad took his pistol and went to the window, took a peek and didn't like what he saw. The guy caught a glimpse of him through the glass, started banging on the window, begging and pleading for us to open up the door. "Please, man, they're gonna kill me out here, please!" "Why? What'd you do?" my dad shouted through the glass. He turned to me and pointed to his phone. He told me to call 911. Any kind of talk about death was reason to have cops on site. I grabbed his phone, but in my stupid kid confidence, I dialed 911 but didn't hit the call button. I got off the bed and went to my dad's side and looked out. There was a small mob coming up from behind this guy. Those people from earlier. I looked at the guy at the door, and I didn't really recognize him. He was dressed different from everyone else. That's when I noticed that logo on his clothing. It was the same as the work truck in the corner of the parking lot. "Dad, I think that's his truck," I said, pointing. "What are you saying?" he asked me. As quickly as I could, I tried to explain what was running through my mind. This guy was just trying to get to his work truck when the drunk people decided to mess with him. I didn't know if I was actually right, but in the moment, it kind of made sense to me. My dad pointed to the guy, who was about to start kicking in our door, and hollered out a question. "Is that your truck out there?" Yes. My dad took a sharp breath through his teeth, unbolted the lock, and swung the door open. He didn't let the guy come inside, just stood right in his way. He brought the pistol up to eye level and let everyone outside get a good look at it too. The guy still tried to barrel inside the room, but Dad stayed firm in his way. "I just called the police," shouted over the voices. That seemed to get everyone's attention pretty quickly. That's when I realized I never dialed it, but seeing everyone tuck their tail and start to leave, I figured it was all over. The guy at our door collapsed against the exterior wall and started explaining everything. He was staying a couple of doors down. He'd been out having a few beers when he made the walk back to the hotel. Right away, he noticed the commotion around his truck. That being said that he was in town to finish a job, he didn't want anything happening to his equipment. He said he made a simple request for them to please get away from his vehicle. The crowd had been boozed up at this point, and so was that roadway worker. What started as a question quickly turned into a barking match. The solo guy was severely outgunned. One push led to another. Soon the guy was surrounded. He said he squared up and swung his way out of the circle, but they laid a pretty good beating on him. It was obvious. His room key fell out of his pocket during the scuffle. He just went door to door, begging for help while these people chased him around. Well, at least that was the partial story. The overnight clerk saw some of the incident from his office, and he really did call the cops. They dropped in out of nowhere, just like my dad. His cruisers rolled into the parking lot, even without so much as headlights on, let alone a siren. They corralled anyone who hadn't already fled. Then the real story came out. It turned out the roadway worker had been having some beers at a nearby bar, but so had that entire crowd. Words were exchanged before finally the bartender kicked them all out. As they wandered the streets talking trash, they recognized the guy's truck in the hotel parking lot. They went and bought a case of beer, then literally tailgated on the guy's truck until he showed up, just so they could have that final word. Again, the solo guy started clashing with the group, only to realize there weren't any bouncers to protect him anymore. Next thing he knows, he's banging on a stranger's door, begging for help. When the law showed up, things got real quiet. People scattered, and those who didn't were detained and questioned. Dad and I didn't have to give a statement, and since I wasn't the one who called the police, we just shut the door and got back in bed. The only person that must have got arrested was that roadway worker. His truck was still in the parking lot the next morning when we left. I'm an amateur photographer, and I have an obsession with nature. This means I love to take stills and action shots of landscapes, as well as lengthy long exposure shots. Rivers, eagles over lakes, overhead lunar panoramas. I'm not a professional by any means, but I have a love for trying my hand at different types of photography. There was a time where I was obsessed with getting these perfect shots of a lightning bolt. I'd seen all these cool collections of totally insane shots. Bolts spiderwebbing out of a single point, only to go and fill the entire frame. And of course, the cool shots, where a single bolt would stretch an unbelievable length across the frame. These pictures are pretty common on Facebook and Instagram nowadays, and I'm sure you've seen what I'm talking about. My friend and I set out on a road trip to go capture one of these shots for ourselves. We did our research, found out where a lot of these photos were being taken. All across the Southwest, there's a time of the year called monsoon, where catastrophic rain can stretch for hundreds of miles. During these bouts of heavy precipitation, the energy builds up in the clouds and makes for tremendous thunder and lightning. We set sail for the most southwestern place that I could imagine, Four Corners, USA. This is where Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, and Colorado all come together in the most perfect symmetry. It's the only place you can be in four states at once. I didn't really care about any of that. I was just reading online that this was a supreme area for lightning photography during monsoon, and would allow me to chase storms into any of these states. I might catch one of these awesome shots that I was looking for. I planned the trip out with a friend of mine. Oh, and full disclosure, we're both women. Cass was a yes girl, always opting to come along on my impromptu photo shoots. And this was the longest ride for us yet, which probably only amplified her desire to go. If I was the amateur photographer, Cass was the stand-in model. We hit the road with a mixed variety of supplies. Obviously, all of my photography equipment, as well as our normal clothes. But then we had a bunch of random props, as well as costumes and accessories for Cass to play around with. She liked to create little narratives within some of our photo series, which was really artsy and unique. We also had some random camping gear, just in case we ran out of money or there wasn't any hotels nearby. We wanted to be prepared for anything, which, looking back, was honestly a pretty tall order. Two young ladies, traveling solo across half the country, to a destination literally in the middle of nowhere. You do the math. Either way, we set sail and had zero issues. The weather was good, at least while we were driving, though, and the car was cruising just fine. We rolled over multiple state lines, even attended a random concert that I got some cool film of, before we finally make it into Colorado. We overnighted in Trinidad before making a last jaunt of the trip the next morning. An absolute beautiful southern drive that took us through the towns like Durango and Cortez. It was some of the most storybook driving that I've still done to this day. Then we dropped into the rolling badlands that connected these four rugged states. We couldn't have struck better timing either. Cass and I could actually see the clouds building up in the distance, vaguely in the direction of our destination. "Damn, we nailed it," Cass screamed at the windshield. We start rolling our windows down and we're met with the warm, heavy air that comes with the monsoons. The humidity and pressure bubble up until it forces the clouds to dump all the moisture back into the ground below. "I guess it pays to do your own research," I said. Remember, we had spent a couple of months planning out this entire trip, so it's not like we were showing up completely blind. Up ahead, we watched as the clouds built up to a towering black form. It looked like something out of a movie, like there should have been a volcano nearby, spewing lava and smoke in every direction. As we got closer, I'll never forget this. Cass and I could literally feel the electricity in the air. The hairs on our arms and legs started to stand up. There was like static nearby, but it was all just energy from the clouds. Even the hair on our heads started to stand upright as we closed in on the Four Corners Visiting Center. I don't know what the place normally looks like, but when we rolled up, it was turning into a ghost town. The rain hadn't started yet, but the darkness and icy winds were running all the tourists back into their cars. When we first pulled in, there were probably 30 people or so milling around, that same number of cars in the parking lot. By the time we got our coats and camera, half of them had retreated into their cars and were looking to get back on the highway and out of that storm. Still, there was a handful of souls meandering around the area. A couple of families here and there, a few older couples, and of course, the rogue soloists with cameras or just their phone. It was a tourist center, so it had an eclectic mismatch of people, which I honestly never gave a thought to. Four Corners is a pretty desolate area, even for having that visiting center. It's just a couple of buildings, then a couple of stalls that have random information. Then there's this big concrete slab with a series of circles in it, which outline where the state lines are and which state you are in as you pass through them. And the dead center was a place where a person could be in four states at once. So we got in the short line to take our photo. By the time we snapped our photographs, that storm was in full effect. The first raindrops fell, big fat ones that were inescapable. The few people that were left all went running for the parking lot. Cass and I were giggling, trying to keep our props and camera gear dry, when something shook us to our very core. That first big rumble of lightning, followed by a crazy streak of lightning right overhead. It was so close that we could feel it in the air, just like before. Cass and I immediately dumped into the front seat of my car and watched the water smatter against the glass. This was it. This is what we came for. We settled into the front seats, watched a row of glowing red tail lights drift off into the growing darkness. It was just the afternoon, but the storm blacked out any sign of daylight. It felt well into the evening, but we were energized, ready to take some cool photos. I remember we had the heater on full blast to keep the windows from fogging up, while we had a little bit of a snack and waited to see where the lightning would be at. It all seemed like it was coming from the northwest, out of Utah, but there also seemed to be a second storm blowing in from the south, or what looked like Arizona. "Maybe that's why it's getting so crazy," I commented. "It looks like two storms are coming together." Whatever the case, the downpour was torrential. As I looked out my window, I could see the vague outline of a car across the way. It looked like someone else was hanging out through the storm too. Just as I was getting ready to mention it, I saw the driver door swing open and a person jump out into the rain. Cass and I were both in disbelief. Who would be so bold as to run around in such a mess? The hard earth out there was rapidly turning into mud, and above, lightning threatened to reach out and touch anyone that dared it. Still, we were a little jealous. It was the exact kind of behavior that we were always trying to emulate. Carefree attitude, chill vibes, young and wild, all that crap. Well, naturally, we started hyping each other up, itching to throw open our doors and just run out into the rain. It wasn't going to take much, as we wanted to cut loose while the storm was still going. Just as I started to open up the door, Cass grabbed me and told me to wait. "Why?" I asked. "Look," she said, nodding through her window. Outside, we could see the phantom form of a stranger starting to take their clothes off. We hadn't been sure if the driver was a man or a woman before, but now it was obvious that it was a man. He tore off his shirt, whirled it around over his head before letting it fly off a good 20 feet. He started running around after that, literally prancing and skipping in every direction. As he moved around, he lost more and more clothing until he was completely naked. Our giggles stopped as we watched in sick horror as this guy splashed in the puddles, rolled in the mud, tried to catch the rain in his hands. I don't know why, but we were just both super creeped out. Watching him in secret made it feel even weirder, like we had front row tickets to this guy's weird private life. Then he started coming over to the car. It wasn't direct at first, but once he closed in, the movement was unmistakable. He made a circle around the whole vehicle before coming up to the passenger window, cupping his hands and peering inside. Cass was on that side of the car. She squeezed all the way over to the center console and into my seat. I don't know when it started, but all of a sudden, the car was filled with screaming. The guy looked on in surprise at first, then joy. He smiled and waved, then started tugging on the handle. Thank God that it was locked. They all were. But that didn't stop the guy from going door to door and trying to open up every single handle. He even tried the trunk. When that didn't work, he started whooping up to the sky. At that point, I'd had enough. I fired up the engine and shifted into reverse. I started turning back for the exit. With all the mud, potholes, and lack of visibility throughout the windshield, I could only go 5 or 6 miles per hour. This weirdo was still running laps around us, and he had no issue keeping up. He gave up after about a half a mile, just simply turned around and jogged back towards the parking lot, to the heart of the storm. To this day, we still have no idea who that guy was or what he was doing. He was a clean-cut looking white guy, maybe 25 at the oldest. Looked like a pretty average dude, short of the naked harassment. Cass and I found a pullout a few miles where we collected ourselves, made sure the car was okay. He never came up driving behind us, so we got the photos that we came for, then headed back towards Durango. If you decide to visit Four Corners, look out for the crazy naked rain dance man. My best friend and I planned a legendary road trip the summer of our senior year. We had just graduated and finished up 4 years of all kinds of commitments, not just school but sports. Also, extracurricular clubs, student council, all kinds of things. We were very busy students, had an overwhelming desire to just cut loose that last year. We also had kind of developed a weird kind of FOMO. We watched everyone have the craziest time of their lives throughout their senior year. So when it came time for our turn, we were ready. The only thing we hadn't accounted for was another friend that was coming along. A guy named Jackson, we'd been on and off friends with for many, many years. He had moved away once, gone through this religious awakening, and then turned into kind of an asshole. There was also something always coming up in his life that was preventing him from hanging out with us. Senior year though, we were buds, and Jackson wanted to come on the road trip with us. Ever, Jackson, and I hit the road that summer and never looked back. We were blasting out the Midwest and shooting for the coast. We wanted to see as much as we could before we hit the beach. Four Corners, the Pueblo ruins in Colorado, the rock formations in Utah, the Grand Canyon, even if we could squeeze it in. The end goal was to crash land in the Monterey area, anywhere in the seaside, and just live and beach cruise as bums for a week or so. We planned the whole thing to take 14 days total, including 6 days of just drive time. By and large, everything was perfect for the moment that we set sail. The weather was beautiful, gas was affordable, and there really wasn't anything holding us back. We listened to some of our favorite music, told funny stories, and saw the familiar sights of our state. As we drifted closer and closer to the state line, things started to look different, new, and we got excited. So excited that I don't think we ever stopped that first night. We just took turns driving straight through until we were way ahead of schedule and just beyond exhaustion. The next morning, we corrected ourselves, got a hotel, and slept like we never had before. We bit off a little more than we could chew pretty much right away, so this helped us keep a much more responsible tone the rest of the trip. Keep it simple, and that way, keep it enjoyable. Lessons to live by, man. The trip went pretty much exactly to plan. Fast forward 5 days, we're floating through the inland California, through some of the sketchiest and dumpiest towns that I've ever seen in my life. Evers said he had family in towns like those, so he had memories of going to visit from his childhood. It was crazy to see the amount of homeless and the urban decay. That stuff aside, it was even crazier to see people making their daily commutes throughout these areas like this, like it was totally normal. Honestly, I couldn't believe it. It was like something out of a dystopian novel. As we were rolling out of these towns, we started to see drifters here and there, mostly in the way of very discreet hitchhikers. We were young. We'd heard rumors that some states didn't allow hitchhikers. For whatever reason, that was a point of conversation throughout the drive. Something had flipped inside of me after seeing so much crazy poverty. Being young and on the road, and sympathetic, I secretly wanted to give a hitchhiker a ride. It sounded cool, exciting, and of course, generous for their situation. It was just one of those milestones of youth that I wanted to tick off, so I floated it out to my buddies. "Hey guys, what if we picked up the next drifter that we passed?" I asked from the passenger seat. Ever was behind the wheel, and Jackson was sprawled out in the back. "Haven't you ever seen that movie?" Jackson asked from the back. "Which one?" I asked. "You know, man," Jackson fumbled. "I don't know what it's called, but it's the one where they pick up a hitchhiker, and he kills everyone in the car with a knife." "It's called Hitchhiker," Ever said. "Yeah, that one," Jackson yelled. We both just laughed up in the front. Jackson was always trying to make what he considered obvious, logical conclusions, but he never actually knew what he was talking about. It was hilarious and always made for a good chuckle, even if it was at his expense. "No one's gonna kill us, dude," Ever said. "I picked up hitchhikers before. Nothing ever happened." It was his car, and he had family all over, so it was a little more well-traveled than either of us. "Okay, do whatever you want then," Jackson said, spreading out back in the back. "Just remember what I said." With that, he fell asleep, or at least pretended to. Ever and I took to looking along the road, shopping for an average-looking person to offer a ride to. We honestly passed a couple of dudes that were pretty mangy and scary-looking, so we blew on right by. We were kids. We didn't want to land ourselves in a situation that we couldn't handle. We wanted to do something different, shake up the miles for a bit, and something generous for people that needed help. Then we saw him. He was just a mile or two beyond the town limits, hanging out just off the shoulder smoking a cigarette. He was younger, probably our age, looked edgy as hell. I'm talking bright bleached hair and that stuck out in every direction, painted fingernails, baggy jeans, and a skin-tight t-shirt. He had a duffel bag sitting on the flaking asphalt right next to him. "What about that dude?" I asked. "Yeah, that looks like the right guy," Ever said with a nod. He braked and then started to pull onto the side of the road. The guy up ahead didn't miss a beat, shouldered his bag and started walking over the moment the passenger tire rolled over that white line. He didn't even want to size us up before he hopped inside, and for some reason, that told me he has to be harmless. If you had ill intent, wouldn't you want to see who was in the car first? It could be a bunch of kids, or it could be a bunch of cops or bikers or some other equally dangerous group of people, but this kid didn't bat an eye. "Holy shit, are you serious?" Jackson asked from the back, swinging his legs around and getting behind the driver's seat. "We're really picking this dude up?" "Yep, at least until we hit the next city," I said. And just then, he popped open the door and dropped in. He set his bag between himself and Jackson. "Hey, thanks for the ride. My name's Croy Scashley. It's nice to meet you guys." That is bar for bar what he said. It's even his real name. I doubt this guy has social media of any kind, if he's even still alive. We went around the car and gave our brief introductions. We told him where we were from and our goal for that trip. He was all ears, cheering on everything we said. Roy even told us he'd give us some pointers and directions to cool things once we got closer to the beach. He's lived in California his whole life. So we switched up, and he told us about himself. He was born in San Diego, where his parents still lived, but he'd been drifting around for about 5 years at this point. He dropped out of school and spent 6 months chasing different bands around the state, couch surfing and sleeping in burned out parking structures. He'd gotten hooked on drugs somewhere in there, and that's when time really started to go by. He went back home a few times and tried to get cleaned up, but now that he'd lived on the road, it called to him all the time. Croy was currently traveling to see a friend that he heard was in the hospital. It seemed like a noble errand for such a vagrant. "You guys mind if I smoke in here?" he asked. Eva and I shared a look. It was his car, so I didn't really have a say. "There's no ashtray," Jackson said from the back, with the voice of reason. "Oh, aren't you done with this?" Croy asked, shaking an empty Coke bottle. "I figured I'd just ash him in here." None of us smoke, man," Eva ventured. "Come on, man," Croy shouted. It all kind of caught us off guard. "I'll put the window down, dude. You stopped and picked me up when I was smoking a cigarette, literally right in front of you. You guys knew I smoke. Quit busting my balls, damn." And with that, he dropped the window and fired up a smoke. Eva just kind of shrugged. The guy did make a good point, and honestly, it's not like the car was brand new or anything. So, Croy just smoked at his own discretion the whole rest of the afternoon. We picked him up around noon or 1. The next city would come up around 7 p.m. Long before that, though, we passed through another small town that had this gas station and a restaurant, maybe 50 houses scattered in the dirt. There was this nice old hotel, too, but it was weird. For some reason, it just gave me the heebie-jeebies. I remembered it had red felt carpet outside the room, like a long patio walkway. It was very dated and very creepy. We briefly stopped in this town just to get a little gas and stretch our legs. I'm gassing up the car. Jackson is inside taking a piss, and Eva is wandering around in circles, trying to loosen up his knees. Croy stayed in the car, kind of talking to himself, but it could have been to us, we just didn't hear him. When we got done getting gas, Jackson had just returned from the bathroom, so we all did kind of a bitch switcheroo. Eva and I headed inside now that Jackson was back with the car. We both had to pee, and both wanted to get something to drink. So after we did our thing, we both then headed back to the car. The second we step outside, we could hear a shouting match, and it takes us minutes to realize that it's coming from our car. We start rushing over and see the back passenger door open. Croy still sitting down and laughing, Jackson standing over him and shouting. "Yo, what's the deal?" I asked. "This guy pinched me, dude," Jackson said, showing me his arm. I wanted to laugh at first, but sure enough, there was this big red raspberry on the inside of his arm. I shook my head and looked over to Eva, who was kind of in charge of this whole thing. I looked up to him like an older brother, so whatever he said, I was probably going to go with. "Why would you do that?" Eva asked. "Come on, I was just messing with him," Roy explained. He leaned up against the window, and I pinched him. I figured it'd scare the hell out of him. "So, is that your version of a joke?" I asked. "Sure," was his response. Then he started cackling like crazy, fired up another cigarette, closed his door, and then nodded for us to get inside. All three of us turned to each other. "I am not riding with him," Jackson said. "I don't want to leave him out here," Evers said. "Let's just drop him off when he gets to the city. He'll probably tuck and roll before we even stop." "I'll sit in the back with him," I offered to Jackson. He looked down and mulled it over before shrugging and then getting into the passenger seat. "You guys remember what I told you? Do you remember?" he asked. We both nodded and got in the car. "Oh, a little switch up. Got you all scared, do I?" Roy asked as I sat next to him. He just wants some more room. He's taller than me," I explained. For the next few minutes, I just talked to Croy, and I mean really got engaged with him. We started talking about politics, and then time, and we had just barely pulled out of the parking lot at this point. This was more than the vibe that I had in mind when I wanted to pick up a hitchhiker. Just talk about some crazy stuff, hang out, whatever. As I'm telling him some of my theories about dark matter, I see Croy do a double take out the window. We're at a small intersection, just getting ready to jump back on the interstate. There's a different hitchhiker standing out there with a sign, a dog, and all of his belongings. I expected Croy to maybe wave or offer a couple of bucks out the window. Anything to lend a hand to support a fellow wayward traveler, right? Instead, what I see is Croy's hand slip up around his Coke bottle ashtray before he throws it as hard as he can at the guy by the road. He actually had to jump out of the way to avoid getting smashed by it. Croy then proceeds to lean out the window and scream a bunch of insults at the guy and his dog, purely just for standing there. "Now what the hell was that all about?" I asked him, once he slumped back into the seat. We were on the highway and gaining speed to leave the whole scene behind. "Gotta look out for these punks on the road, man. It's dog eat dog and everyone is out to get you," he explained. "He's just trying to feed his dog," I said, and he interrupted me. "It's not about that guy. It's not personal. It's just the very notion. Living on the road is chaos by definition. The best thing that we can do is keep each other on our toes. I'm looking out for the guy, really. You just wouldn't understand." It turned out Croy was full of inconsistencies, a walking contradiction, so to speak. If he said left, he would turn right, if you catch my drift. Suddenly, the depth of whatever we were talking about just didn't seem genuine, like everything he said was just coming out of nowhere. I watched as his legs became restless, his hands started shaking, even as we talked, and he became more and more irritable, chain-smoking cigarettes at this point. "I need to buy some more smokes," he said at one point, as the sun was starting to dip down. No one responded because, frankly, no one really cared. It was like 5 p.m. and there wasn't anything in sight. We wouldn't come upon a store or a gas station until we hit the outer limits of the city, and that's where we would be stopping for the night. "Hey, let's stop so I can get some cigarettes." "There's not a gas station for 90 miles, dude. Look around you," Jackson said. "I am looking around me, and I can see a bunch of losers," Croy shot back. Then full bore slapped Ever in the ear. The car squealed off the road and then onto the shoulder before he corrected it and got us back on the highway. I jumped into action at this point. As I said in the beginning, Ever is my best friend. I slammed Croy into the door and tied up his arms as best I could. He was a skinny little runt, but honestly, he had that wiry tweaker muscle that you could see sometimes. I could feel his arms and legs rippling just under mine, trying to find a weakness. "Look, man," I tried to explain. "You do anything like that again, I'm gonna yank open this door and let you hit the highway at about 80 miles an hour. You ready to be a layer of paint people are driving through?" "Oh, we're cool, man, we're cool," he said, but still I could feel his fingers looking for a way out, and I didn't take my hand off the door handle. Everything settled down for real. We just sat quietly through the last stretch of the drive. Roy started asking us about our trip again, trying to be normal and give us advice on where to go. But now, none of us were interested. We focused on the music and talked to each other a little bit. He just leaned against the window and stared out in the passing desert. Eventually, a gas station came into view, the first signs of the city. We had a hotel room pre-booked by our parents waiting for us and knew exactly where we were going. "Hey, look, cigarettes. Can we stop?" Roy asked. "Sure," Ever said. We were all a little surprised. He pulled off the highway and cruised into the parking lot. "Just a minute, you guys want anything?" I shook my head. "See if they got Yoo-hoo, the chocolate drink," Evers said. I'd never even seen him drink Yoo-hoo in his entire life. Croy nodded and walked for the store. "What do you guys think? Let's leave him here, right?" Evers said, the second the guy was out of earshot. "Yeah, this guy's fucking crazy, dude. Let's get out of here," Jackson confirmed. I looked out the window a bit in shock. Were we really about to do that? Just burn out of here and leave this guy stranded? When I thought about it, though, he was stranded to begin with. He was always going to be stranded. We'd done our part and got him to his next destination, the city with the hospital where he was supposed to meet up with his friend. "Yep," I said. "Let's get to the hotel before he catches us." Ever burned out of there like it was Grand Theft Auto. Didn't even stop at the red light just to make sure that we were well down the road by the time Croy came out of that gas station. The last thing that we needed was him chasing us down the road. It wasn't until we got a mile or two that we realized that we still had his duffel bag. I looked down and got this sick, sour feeling in my stomach. I pulled it over and set it on the seat next to me. It felt wet, damp. It was heavy too, and it smelled like mildew. Worse even. "Hey, we got Croy's stuff back here," I said. "Are you serious? Why didn't you toss it out in the parking lot?" Jackson asked. "I don't know. I didn't see it." Ever immediately hit his blinker and started to turn around. "I'm down to leave this guy, but I'm not stealing his stuff," he explained. He and Jackson started to argue a bit, and I just relaxed in the back. All of this crap was out of my control. It had been like 9 hours in the car that day. I just wanted to sleep in a bed. Whatever they decided was fine by me, as long as we didn't let that dude back in the car. He was a seriously disturbed guy. Then it occurred to me I could rifle through his stuff and not have any consequences. I unzipped the bag and got more questions than answers. The first thing that I noticed was all the underwear. It was like 20 pairs of women's panties. I couldn't tell if they were clean or not. They seemed to be all kinds of various sizes, and I'm just assuming that they were stolen. There was a book by Albert Camus, which had a partial sheet of acid stored inside. There was also a bag of what looked like to be cocaine, and get this, a full pack of cigarettes. Why he wanted to stop was beyond us. There was a little more spooky stuff too. A real pair of metal handcuffs with a small key, a really big combat knife, and a single change of what looked like normal clothes. I didn't dig much deeper than that. Everything was really gross, and I could tell that we were coming back up on the gas station. I told them what I found, and they all got a little bit concerned. But as we pulled in, we could see Croy was waiting for us. He was waiting against the building smoking a cigarette, just like we found him earlier. Ever rolled through the lot and tossed the bag out the window. Croy gave us the finger, and then we got back on course for the hotel. The rest of the night went pretty normal. We got some dinner at a cool pizza place just down the road, even found an arcade, then went back to the hotel to crash. We parked around back just to keep the car off the street and out of view for anyone walking by. The next morning, though, I woke up before Jackson and Ever. I was getting myself together when I realized I left my bathroom bag in the car. I slipped on my shoes and went out only to see a bunch of papers tucked under the windshield and cigarette butts all over the ground. I got up to the car, and the pages were out of that book in Croy's bag. Some old French philosophy book. From what I could tell, Croy had found our car and just hung out all night in it. I don't know if he was waiting for us or just wanted to make a point, but it rattled us to the core that next morning. I was certain that he was hiding somewhere, just waiting to step out and catch us off guard. We got ourselves together and literally skipped town. We were all really scared at that point. This guy had the advantage of knowing the city. We were just operating on Google Map printouts. Thankfully, we never ran into him again. But you better believe that we were on our toes the rest of that trip. If Croy Scashley hears this, sorry for stealing your stuff, dude. Hey everyone, thanks for listening if you stuck around to this point. If you haven't yet, please hit the like button, the subscribe button, and that notification bell to be notified when future episodes come out. If you have a true scary story of your own, feel free to send it to us at all the information below. You can send it to us on Reddit or to the Gmail that's in the description below on every video. You can stalk me on Twitter, X, whatever, and you can also stalk me on Instagram. All of these links are below. Hey everyone, thanks for listening again. If you stuck around to this point, sorry about last week. What was it? Wednesday or Thursday night, I can't remember which. I started feeling like shit. Woke up, didn't have a voice hardly for about 2 days, and then when I did get my voice back, I still sounded nasally and stuffy, which you can still even hear that in my voice today. And I know there's other narrators out there that'll do it, but I will not put out an episode when I sound super nasally, just because I hate the way it sounds. It sounds half-ass, and I just don't like putting out content and stuff like that when I sound like shit, and especially when I sound like shit and still kind of feel like shit. And then both my kids ended up getting sick, so it was just a snowball effect from me to them. And yeah, it was just the shit show all weekend, so that's why there was no second episode, and I didn't do the live, whatever, 50k Q&A. That's gonna for sure happen, but who knows when it's gonna happen. It's just, you know, it's probably gonna end up being just a random, you know, spur of the moment type of thing for me. Probably won't be a lot of advance warning. I'll just be like, hey, I'm gonna do it tonight. Whoever can show up, cool. If you can't, you can't. So be it. Yeah, there will be two episodes this week, I promise. That was just a fluke, and like I said, if there's not a second episode, there's a fucking, like, a good reason behind it, and I felt like shit and all that. I'm not gonna go over it again, but you get my point. That's why there wasn't. I don't know what the hell else I'm gonna say. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode, and we can get back in the routine and the swing of things here. It's starting to finally get warmer here and nicer, so I'm really stoked and looking forward to that. I'm sure you are too. Anyways, I think that's it. I'm gonna be done rambling and gluing you guys in on my whatever I got going on, and I'll see you on Thursday for the next episode. All right, cheers.